from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Field Yates of ESPN. He's an NFL insider for the Four Letter Network and also co-host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. There's nobody better to talk to about the Patriots' exhilarating, exciting, and unconventional offseason than Field. He's a former NFL scout. He worked for the team, also worked for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's also a family friend of the Belichicks going way back, so he has some pretty good insight into what's happening in Foxborough. He tells us what motivated the Patriots' unprecedented spending spree. Field also explains what a pendulum player is and why Cam Newton is that guy for this year's Patriots. Also, Field discusses whether the Patriots are eyeing a move up the board in the NFL draft for one of the quarterback prospects. That would be really exciting if the Patriots were able to move up. But most importantly, Ellen, he talks about something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, the show Laguna Beach.
Yeah, and the thing is about Field, we have very, you know, both of us, we really respect him in his field. And usually what he says when it comes to football, you know, he makes extremely good points.
Yes.
But to have the audacity to say that Summer House is the new Laguna Beach.
Blasphemy.
It was blasphemy.
It was.
And I'm very happy. Thank you for having my back on that. Thank you for, you know, sticking with this team when it came to that.
Team Laguna all day.
I mean, we, thankfully, he changed his mind at the end.
But yeah, we threw the challenge flag on Field on that one.
Yeah,
upon
yeah.
further review, he was dead wrong.
Yeah, he was dead wrong. Yeah, I mean, there was a few things I knew about Field before this. It was that he loves craft beer and he loves Laguna Beach. And I would have viewed him as a Lauren Conrad stan.
Great point.
But apparently, he's a Stephen Coletti stan.
He totally is. And I could see that. He kind of looks a little like Stephen. You know,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
He does. And so I could see that back in the day. And in the beginning, Stephen was a big part of the show. But obviously, you know, my favorite person, Kristen Cavallari, who has just become an incredible boss as a businesswoman now. She has like her own branding and everything. She sort of stole the spotlight from Stephen. And really, one of the things I like about Laguna, I feel like it was a little ahead of its time in that the focus was on the females, and they were the stars, and it revolved around them, and it was the men who were the supporting pieces, which I think Field and I are both married. Watching that show was good preparation for marriage.
That is very true. And, you know, speaking of marriage, Kristen is very close to the sports world and the football world with her now soon-to-be ex-husband.
I don't know if the divorce is official with Jay Cutler. But
yeah, but it's in the works.
Yeah, they're separated.
And, you know, he was, so Field, yes, he loved Stephen Coletti, who was kind of a model at the time when the show was on. He was on every cover of everything. He was like the teenage heartthrob. And we also found out Field is a model.
Yes, we did. Field actually has done some modeling, and I happen to come across it. And so if you want to learn more about that and also what's up with the Patriots offseason, well, nobody better to talk to than Field Yates, and he's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
Now, as promised, we're joined by ESPN NFL insider Field Yates. Field, thanks for joining us here on the Take 5 Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on, Chris. Always good to catch up with you. And this is our first time podcasting together.
So I know. I know we are breaking some new ground. You know, we've talked like many times, and you've been nice enough to you know, help me out with some stuff and come on Channel 5 and do all that stuff. But yeah, this is right. This is our maiden podcast together. And what a great time to do a podcast, because I don't think there's another team in the NFL that has made bigger waves or a bigger splash or has been more at the center of the offseason conversation than the New England Patriots. And you obviously have some roots with the Patriots, having worked for them, and your personal connections with the Belichick family. So I think you're the perfect person to ask this. What motivated the Patriots' spending spree here in free agency, where they spent more than $340 million to remake this roster?
Yeah, by the way, Chris, it was like there was a time over the weekend where they didn't sign somebody, or at least there had been no reported agreements for like 12 hours, and I was starting to get a little nervous. I'm like, is everything okay? Like, you know, has the power gone out at Gillette or something? What's the holdup here? And they got right back down to business with more depth-level signings. But I think people are trying to grasp onto, or maybe find a singular factor that contributed to the Patriots spending spree when I think it most likely, this is one of those trendy words these days, a confluence, right, of factors.
I love that.
So
word.
Let's see if we can list them, not necessarily in a particular order and maybe not comprehensively, but at least some of the factors that contributed to the Patriots is that understanding that when Tom Brady and the Patriots agree to a renegotiated deal just prior to the 2019 regular season, that deal included a clause that prevented the Patriots from using the franchise tag on Tom Brady. It gave Tom, if he desired, a pathway to be a free agent. When you do that, you also have to be mindful of the possibility that Tom does leave, which he did, of course. And at some point, the Patriots are going to have to sort of reset their books a little bit, because when they had Tom on their roster, as is incredibly wise business to do, a lot of moves you're making are pushing cap commitments into the future, right? That's the same thing we're seeing with the Buccaneers right now, the same thing we're seeing with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. That's just customary for teams that have a franchise quarterback. So the Patriots kind of took all the lumps of their cap in one year, and that was 2020, when not knowing that we were going to have this cap depression because of COVID, but the Patriots had a lot of deals that they were able to kind of get off the books this past year and leave them in a position to spend during the 2021 season. That was a lengthy item, number one. Number two is the fact that because of the depressed salary cap, it became a buyer's market. Teams that maybe had their eyes on Matt Judon or Jonnu Smith or Hunter Henry or anybody else the Patriots wound up signing, they just didn't have the resources to do so. We saw teams that moved some money around to get creative for a singular free agent, but like, look at the Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason. They signed one player, maybe two so far, from a different team. B.J. Feeney is an example. Feeney, excuse me, is an example for the Steelers. The Packers, at least as of when you and I are recording this conversation, haven't signed a single free agent from a different team. Some teams just had such limited resources that it created an opportunity for the Patriots to spend big. And then, Chris, make no mistake about it. 7-9 is not something anybody in the building in Gillette wants to go through, right? They don't want to have another season that played out like last year's. But when you have the opportunity to vastly improve your roster, and you can't tell me that the roster is not vastly improved right now.
Oh, definitely. It is. It is.
You need to do it. Now, what's going to determine how we look back on these signings is going to be how these players play relative to their new compensation.
I would completely agree with you. And I guess for me, the part that's interesting and a little different is that for a long time, and this goes back to, I remember having this conversation with Robert Kraft in Dana Point, California in 2009 at the owners' meetings. And he was talking about how much they banked on and were proud of what he's called brand equity. This idea that players would take less to play for the Patriots. Almost all of these signings, Field, are like top of the market. You know, they paid basically market rate or top of the market to bring these guys in. And as Robert Kraft mentioned to Peter King, the Patriots used to sort of laugh at or look down on franchises that would splurge like this in free agency. And now they're doing it. And that's definitely a shift. And it's for all the reasons that you outlined. But it is a very significant shift. And it's something we haven't seen before. And what it comes down to for me is, and you know Bill Belichick better than I do, but what I've learned covering Bill Belichick is when he says, I do what's in the best interest of the team, that's true. And it's a catch-all for, look, in one situation, maybe I acted one way, but don't pin me to that and say that I can't act another way in another situation. I think he's inverting the model here, because I think for a long time, at least the second half of the dynasty, they relied on the quarterback to make the team better. Now they want the team to make the quarterback better.
Yeah, I was saying that on ESPN, I think I've lost track of time because it's all relative. Recently, I will say, which is accurate, that based off of, even if the player himself did nothing throughout the offseason, few players have been thrust into a better position to succeed in 2021 relative to where they were in 2020 than Cam Newton. Now, Cam obviously is going to work incredibly hard. I don't care what you say about the performance last year. It was not due to lack of effort, right? That much we know from Cam, watching him this past year and then also knowing him over the course of the first eight seasons of his career. But Cam Newton's pass catchers last year compared to Cam Newton's pass catchers this year, even if you disagreed with the price on some of these players, I mean, the idea of throwing to two very capable tight ends relative to two guys who were rookies who were fish out of water a little bit last year in Dalton Keene and Devin Asiasi. I think the Cam is set up for a much better level of success. And there aren't a ton of teams that can rely upon the rest of the roster to kind of carry the quarterback and be super successful year over year. But I don't know that the Patriots' plans right now are for Cam to be a souped up version of last year, even if he's not like an MVP caliber player, and be the long-term solution, right? It's a one-year deal. And if we did this podcast in a month and a week from right now, we might be talking about the Patriots having taken a first round quarterback too. But I'm with you in the idea that the strength of this roster might be, you know, they seem to me to check basically every box on defense, very solid offensive line, and an improved group of pass catchers, that they could be, with, you know, slightly above average quarterback play this year, a 10 or 11 win team.
Can they get that quarterback play out of Cam? I mean, obviously last year I think was stark in terms of what he was able to do. And I think it was eye-opening and in some ways disheartening, I think, for Cam and for everybody with the organization. He threw 8 touchdown passes and 10 picks. They were last in the league in touchdown passes, and that required 4 from other people, 2 from Jared Stidham, 2 from Jacoby Myers. You know, obviously, Bill Belichick and the Patriots have thrown their lot in here with Cam Field. They obviously feel he can do better, and they see him more than anyone. But when you look at him, based on your background as a scout, are the things that he did last year fixable with just more talent?
I think that the talent part of it is going to help some of it. But I think there's also some stuff that, like, regardless of whether he was throwing to Jerry Rice and Randy Moss in their prime or whoever it is that's available for the Patriots in week one, I still think there's some areas that Cam needs to be, you know, much more improved in. And the hardest part, Chris, to draw the line between is by week 3 of last year, I think anybody who watched the Patriots closely felt like Cam was maybe not super Cam, MVP Cam, but a really solid starter at that point. And it felt like the model for the rest of the year could be kind of what we're talking about right now. Play really good defense, be good on special teams, run the football well. I believe Sony Michel had that really good game against the Raiders,
yes,
which he ended up getting hurt in late. And you're like, oh yeah, this team could kind of, you know, they could jerry-rig their way to 10 wins again this year by sort of following the model, right? So I don't want to say that there is an 85% chance that Cam Newton gets back to where he was at the beginning of the year. I also don't think it's like a 5% chance. I think that Cam, maybe it's somewhere in the middle. Maybe it's 50-50. And if Cam is playing better than where he was at the beginning of last year by a little bit, by dint of the pieces they have around him now, this Patriots offense will look a lot better. But I'm not naive enough to think that he can be anywhere close to where he was at the end of last season and expect them to improve. So I don't know if there are, I kind of use the term pendulum players every year.
I like that.
It usually ends up being quarterbacks. Yeah, and it usually ends up being the quarterbacks of teams where you say, all right, the roster's pretty good, if not really good, at basically every other key spot. The quarterback, his, like, the floor and the ceiling are determined by the quarterback. Like, I think the Patriots, with a Cam like he was last year, if they were 7-9 last year, I think they can win maybe 8 games this year, right? But if Cam is much better, then, again, if he's great, then I think 10, 11, 12 wins is definitely within reach, especially if you have that 17th game. So you have the opportunity to get one more underneath your belt.
I guess, you know, the question for me is, are the Patriots done at quarterback, or will they bring in another guy, another veteran guy, I mean, to sort of compete with Cam? I could see them doing something in the draft, but is there another veteran guy in here that's maybe Cam insurance, or is Cam the guy and then they'll draft somebody and that young guy maybe by the end of the year could take over for Cam? But really, drafting a guy, in my mind, if that's the only other addition to the quarterback room, says this is Cam's ship for most of 2021.
Yeah, I think that's my thought too. I'm just sort of playing the what's available on the table right now. So we know there are probably 5 quarterbacks that will go in the first round of the draft. Maybe the floor for those quarterbacks is the Patriots at pick 15. But if you look at veterans right now around the NFL that could be theoretically available, there aren't many. Now, there's one that won't go away until the season begins or he's traded elsewhere, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes.
Now, I would just say this, Chris, is that it would strike me as like an interesting approach if they ended up if you trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, do you immediately release Cam Newton if you're the Patriots? Right? Because, like, if you have a competition, and I don't mean that, I actually don't mean that as like to be dismissive of Cam, but it's like, don't you kind of feel like because they're so stylistically different, you have to sort of go one direction or the other, right? A quarterback competition that involves Cam Newton and Jimmy Garoppolo also involves two different offenses.
Great
and
point.
You've got all these new pieces you're integrating that you really want to say, all right, hey, Nelson, Aguilar, you know, this snap, you're running the Cam offense, and then come back to the huddle, get your brain adjusted to the Jimmy Garoppolo offense. So I think Jimmy Garoppolo probably is not an option for the Patriots. I've learned enough to never dismiss anything entirely in the NFL, but factoring in the finances, the fact that it's not like San Francisco has a quarterback heir apparent behind Jimmy G, and the fact that a lot of the moves do signal that the Patriots feel like they can build an offense that gives Cam a chance to maximize his value, makes me believe that Cam is the guy with a draft pick behind him going into the season.
I would agree with you. Let me throw one name out there, though, who I think could do a lot of things very similar to Cam Newton and has more upside than Cam. And I've mentioned this before in this pod. People forget, I think, another genius coach named Bill Walsh, got his successor through a reclamation project. He got Steve Young from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Steve Young was basically sort of seen as a lost cause. He had struggled with the Bucs. The Bucs had the number one pick, were taking Vinny Testaverde, and Bill Walsh gave up a second round pick and a fourth round pick to bring in Steve Young. A guy who reminds me in some ways physically with the skill set of Steve Young is Marcus Mariota. And he just redid his contract with the Raiders. He's been pretty adamant about the fact he wants to stay with them, but he took a huge, huge haircut to stay there. He's down to about $3.5 million, and he can make $8 million, whereas before, if he played, he was going to make about $10 million, and he could make up to $20 million if he somehow supplanted Derek Carr or if Derek Carr got injured. Now, I had heard the Patriots were interested in Mariota, and interest is relative, Field, as we know. You know, it's like making a call. But is that a guy you could see them potentially pursuing and talking to Mike Mayock and John Gruden and seeing what the cost is, and you bring him in? Or do you think the Patriots look at it and say, well, Mariota is not a clear upgrade over Cam. We don't want to muddy the water.
First of all, it's sort of funny that when Mariota agrees to that renegotiated deal, people say, all right, Mario, he's there to stay in Las Vegas. And it's like, he actually became like quite a bit more tradable now,
absolutely,
right? I mean, when your base salary gets slashed decidedly, like you noted, it's like, yeah, you know, the compensation may be a little bit more expensive because you're going to pay him less. It's more of a value, but I think he's more attainable in some ways. I think it's possible. I think, though, the team probably feels as though the best course of action, when you factor in how few reps Cam got prior to the season last year and how much value there might be, and I'm not just talking about the throwing sessions that we've already seen around the NFL, but with the Patriots specifically so far this offseason, that maybe not an error of their, if anything, I mean, Chris, you know, I know you were part of the conversation. All of us were at the end of last year when people were clamoring for why not start Jared Stidham?
Yes, like, yes, just to get a look.
Yeah, part of me wonders if, like, the Patriots felt like, hey, if there's a 10% chance that Cam is back next year, these are valuable reps, right? And even if there is, like, an incremental upgrade available, like Mariota, it might be in their best interest to say, every rep counts, we're going to draft the kid, but that's for 2022 and beyond. For now, the 2021 focus is Cam Newton.
Yeah, that's interesting to me, and here's why. Because, you know, what I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard different things as well, is that, and you mentioned this, that they are under no illusion that Cam Newton is the long-term answer for them at quarterback. I look at somebody like Mariota, and again, you know, I know it's a little bit of a stretch to say he's going to be Steve Young, but nobody thought Steve Young would be Steve Young. And I think Mariota is a guy who could be not only an incremental upgrade this year, but if you can coach him up, suddenly you might find your long-term answer. Maybe he is sort of your Ryan Tannehill. Maybe what happened to him in Tennessee, you know, he can sort of do here. And that is a long-term answer. And the other question I have related to quarterback and pursuing a guy like Mariota is my understanding sort of the Patriots culture, Field, has always been it's very much performance-based. And it seems to me that Cam somehow gets special dispensation because if it's really a performance-based culture, I don't see how you can make the argument that he doesn't at least have to compete with another viable option to win this job in 2021.
That's all fair, and I agree with basically everything that you noted right there. The only question I have is, like, circumstantially, whether things were a little bit different last year, right? Like, It's one thing if you're a player when the Patriots are 11-3, but you're the struggling offensive guard and you're the difference between the team potentially cementing home field advantage and playing in the first round of the playoffs versus last year, like, you know, if you bench Cam, right, it's answering all these questions. And is it a basically, a, you know, the ceremonial waving of the white flag? Is it an omission that, or an admission, excuse me, that Cam was not the right guy from the get-go? Like, I do think there may be a little bit different weight carried each year in each circumstance. But I would suspect, and, you know, this is a March 24th conversation, so bookmark it and I'll sound like an idiot potentially in 6 or 7 months.
You never sound like an idiot, Field. That's impossible.
Man, my wife would disagree. But, you know, I think there's I think that, you know, the leash probably is shorter this year because the team is going to be better, right? And yes. I know the Patriots started solid last year, 2-1, but this team, I don't know. I mean, I think the Bills were probably regarded by most people as the favorites in the AFC East going into the season. But with 7 playoff teams right now, the Patriots are at least part of the conversation, right? Nothing is earned in March, but the Patriots are at least part of the playoff conversation because the roster is so solid all the way around right now, other than quarterback being a little bit of an uncertainty.
Yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying, and it does make sense. And I definitely think they'll be better. Like, you're talking to someone who last year thought they had a legitimate path to the playoffs. You know, even with Cam playing the way that he was playing, I thought, believing in Ellen shaking her head because we had to do a lot of path talk here, but
no one believed in the path more than you.
I did. I honestly did. Well, because I also believed sort of in the lack of capability and the futility of some of the other teams in the AFC and the AFC East. And if they had just gotten, that's my thing about this, where I feel like, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I would like some sort of quarterback insurance and some sort of quarterback reassurance, because I really feel if Cam Newton had just played at a baseline average level last year, they would have made the playoffs. It was there for them. And this team, to Field's point, with the upgrades, bringing in guys like Matthew Judon and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry and Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne, and bring back guys like Trent Brown and Kyle Van Noy, and having a guy like Dante Hightower come back after he opted out, I feel like there's a lot more margin for error for them. And really the only thing that can stop them is the quarterback position. And that's why maybe I would want a little more competition there.
Well, I mean, I said last week on the podcast how, like, I can't believe someone can stink so bad at their job and still get a $2.5 million raise. But the way you're talking now, it's making me think that the way they structured his now contract, he is extraordinarily competitive. He is very flashy. He likes money and he's a very proud man. Do you think the contract to compete basically against himself to make more money would just in fact make him a better quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a possibility. Yeah, I think there's a possibility of that. I think what you really hit on there, Ellen, was the idea of he is a proud guy, and I think he was disappointed the way things went last year, and I think he really likes it here, and he likes being coached by Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. He realizes that those guys give him an instant advantage every time he steps on the field, and I think he really took to the culture. So, you know, when I look at the contract, I look at it as, you know, the motivating factor there is not necessarily money. The motivating factor is, okay, I want to go back to New England and prove to everybody that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels were right to believe in me. Like, I want this to pay off for them and me.
I think you're giving them too much credit, I think. It's not bad to say that an athlete wants the money.
Let me ask you this, Field, and I know you want to jump in. Was there any other market for Cam?
Not much. And they're certainly not significant. And Alan's point is one that I saw made frequently about how, like, Cam played the way that he did last year and got a raise. And so that is true. It's at, like, the core of it, right? I mean, he's got $3.5 million in guaranteed money as opposed to, I think it was, what, $1 million in guaranteed money last year from the Patriots. What I will say, though, is while it's natural to look at it from Cam year one to Cam year two and compare the two deals, I sort of look at it as like the quarterback landscape in general, right? Cam Newton is making, in terms of guaranteed money, 70% of what Jacoby Brissett is making to be an unquestioned backup to Tua, right? So, like, Jacoby Brissett gets $5 million to sit on the bench in Miami. Cam is getting $3.5 million guaranteed. Joe Flacco, $3.5 million guaranteed to back up Jalen Hurts. Mitch Trubisky, $2.5 million, maybe not guaranteed, but still $2.5 million to back up Josh Allen. That the Cam, like the overcorrection was, you know, they have to, I guess, overcorrect for last year, where Cam was so limited, had so few options, that last year, like, he literally took all he could get. It may be a raise, but still, like, Cam has got to be in the bottom, I mean, certainly the bottom quarter, maybe even like the bottom five in terms of starting quarterbacks in cash payment for this upcoming year, unless he plays great. And if he plays great, and if he hits every achievable incentive, which is, you know, anybody's banking on it, but it would be the greatest, it would be the biggest bargain in Patriots franchise history. And it took Tom Brady in the sixth round.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Second biggest.
The Patriots do love the V word, value. You're right. Cam could still be that value. I think that philosophically what you're seeing here too is an idea that they want to sort of reset their percentage of the cap that's allocated to the quarterback, and whether that's through Cam or it's through, you mentioned, a young quarterback, and that's where I want to go with you. Obviously, this is a pretty decorated, celebrated quarterback class. There's at least five guys people believe can go in the first round, starting with Trevor Lawrence, who would go 1-1. And then you have Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones in some order. So out of those guys, with the Patriots picking at 15 field, which would be, if they just stay at 15, that would be, and picked an offensive player, he would become the highest selected offensive player of the Bill Belichick era at 15. Out of those quarterbacks, who's the guy you think maybe they have their eye on?
Yeah, so we can dismiss Trevor Lawrence, obviously, entirely. I think Zach Wilson's probably gone as well. I think Trey Lance is the most intriguing out of those three. And this could very well be one of those where if you polled 30 general managers, you might get like 12 votes for one guy, 10 for the other, and 8 for the third player. I think Mac Jones is the most likely to be there. I just have a hard time. And I understand that Trey Lance is such a projection. I mean, the guy played one football game this past year. He played at Division I AA level. He's a redshirt sophomore. So prior to this one game this year, he had one season playing college football. But the athleticism is it's absurd. I don't want to make a simple comparison, but you know, the way that he made defenders look almost like flies at the 1AA level was reminiscent of Cam and the way that he did that to NFL defenders at his peak. So Trey Lance, such a gifted thrower down the field, very innovative. He had threw zero interceptions for the entire 2019 season, Chris. That might be lucky. It might be competition, but there's definitely some skill involved when you can make calculated decisions to prevent interceptions. So Lance is the guy that I find to be the most fascinating. It's also possible, by the way, that Trey Lance is gone by like pick 4 or 3. So this could be a conversation that sounds fun in March, but really is rooted in 0% reality.
How willing do you think the Patriots are to mortgage some draft capital to try and move up? How far do you think they'd have to go up? Or are we in a situation where, you know, the Patriots will make a move if there's a slider, if somebody slides to 10, 11, 12, you know, they maybe can get some of their friends sort of to help them out. But is it more a situation like they'll be super aggressive, like we've seen teams do in the past, to move up?
You know, first of all, the price is going to be absurd to move all the way up to like pick 3 or 4. We're talking about, I would think, at minimum, pick 15, 2022 first round pick, maybe even a 2023 first round pick with some other stuff on top to make it all worthwhile for that third, fourth, fifth team in the draft order this year. But if somebody starts to slide a little bit, if we get to pick 8 or pick 7, and you see one of those quarterbacks or two that you particularly fancy are still available, because it's worth noting, Chris, I don't want to come out, you know, I want to be careful in like comparing quarterbacks to houses. But the analogy is that, you know, sometimes your evaluation of quarterbacks can be like your evaluation of real estate. 5 homes might be worth approximately the same amount on the open market, but that doesn't mean that you and I are going to like the same of those 5 the most, right?
Yes.
Like, maybe you like house A and I like house B and Ellen likes house C.
Yeah.
Just because there are 5 great quarterback prospects this year, the Patriots may say, yeah, that's great. But other than Trevor Lawrence, the only one that we love is Justin Fields. So if he's gone by pick 2, then we're out of the quarterback sweepstakes here in this first round. So I think it would have to be a slider more so than one where they trade all the way up, just because there are so many teams that need a quarterback this year that are slightly ahead of them in the order that I think would have just a much clearer path to acquiring one.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, you know, on that. And it's, I really appreciate, by the way, Phil, the housing analogy as someone who is currently looking for a home in this very, very much buyer's market here, where the costs are definitely prohibitive. And yeah, the way it's going here, it's sort of similar to the quarterback market in that there's more demand than supply. And my wife and I, we've definitely gone through that looking for a house. And we've just basically realized that maybe like the Patriots at 15, we just can't afford the house of our dreams. So maybe they just can't afford the quarterback of their dreams right now. And you just have to be a little patient and wait down the road. I do want to tap into your scouting brain here because of your background as an NFL scout. When you're evaluating a quarterback, you know, what is it that you are looking for? You mentioned Trey Lance, and one of the things I've heard from scouts on him is they like the fact that he seems to be intelligent, that he processes quickly, that he had to set the protections there at North Dakota State. And I know with the college game, it's sort of diverged from the NFL game. You know, now we've talked about this on this podcast. A lot of the stuff is sort of done for the players. It's almost like predetermined. You know, look at the sideline and look at this sign that's being held up, and it's a picture of Kim Kardashian with a banana and, you know, maybe like and maybe like a diamond ring, and that tells everybody, you know, what the play is.
I would say so. The starting point for the quarterback evaluation is going to be decision making and also accuracy, and that stuff may sound intuitive. That's okay. Having a strong arm does not mean that's not the catch-all, right? You got to have an accurate arm, right? I mean, we've seen guys who have absolute cannons who couldn't put the ball where it was supposed to be 10 yards away from them. So accuracy is certainly a big thing. And then I think that athletic ability, and I mean that functionally, like outside of the pocket, matters more than ever today in quarterback evaluation. You go back to last year, and eight starting quarterbacks had at least 400 rushing yards last year. That number could balloon. And by the way, there were some that like narrowly missed there as well. You could probably count the number of starters at quarterback right now that are like athletically deficient in the NFL.
Yeah.
And the number that are really good, I mean, it's basically Brady and like
maybe Matt Ryan.
Yeah. And even Ryan is like, you know, I would say like a sufficient athlete, not a great one, not a terrible one. Right. So need a guy that's athletic. And that's the biggest question mark surrounding Mac Jones is, you know, he has never had to escape the pocket and run frequently. I do think that that's one of the questions that team's going to have to evaluate for Mac Jones. Does he have the skill to compensate for that lack of elite athletic ability that a Trey Lance, a Justin Fields, a Zach Wilson, and a Trevor Lawrence all have?
So what I'm hearing from you is that maybe the Patriots see the changing tide in the NFL of quarterback, and that in a successor for Tom Brady or whatever the offense is, whatever it looks like post-Tom Brady, that they're going to move more to the current NFL model than the one they had before. Is that fair to say that philosophically there are going to be some changes offensively built around the idea that right now the zeitgeist in the NFL at that position is guys who are mobile, guys who can challenge the defense with their legs?
Yeah, it's funny. I think the Patriots have always been good about this. I know Bill talked about it publicly in his press conference that like we think of the game as evolving when really like the game is just running in circles. You know, we talk about how people are like, you know, the spread it out, you know, all these four wide set offenses. It's like, recall the K-gun by chance? Like, you know, right. That was like a very wildly successful offense.
Or Mouse Davis 90s. In the run and shoot.
Totally. Like these things existed previously. It's just that what tends to happen is that when a team or when teams, you know, run the same sort of concepts, defenses find ways to counter them. As defenses get a little bit ahead of the curve, offenses adapt. And so maybe the Patriots, as we're seeing this offseason, by the way, and I'm sort of tangenting here, this two tight end set, like maybe the Patriots are getting back to a little bit more of a kind of a bully ball on offense where, you know, you got to have good wide receivers too, but your tight end, you know, the original idea with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez was, you know, put the defense in an unfavorable spot. Are you going to be able to, you know, play your base defense where they're going to rip, you know, they're going to just totally overwhelm linebackers and pass coverage? Or are you going to play a nickel defense where Gronk gets his hands on a defensive back and he's going to swat him like a fly? So I do think that the Patriots are being mindful of how quarterbacks are playing now and the importance of being able to have quarterbacks that make second reaction plays. And not saying that they're going to always be, you know, followers, they're going to be leaders in a lot of cases of these trends. But I do think right now it's important with the way that we're playing defense around the NFL that the Patriots and any team has a competent athlete at quarterback.
I want to ask you this because you mentioned about, you know, Bill Belichick and the sort of evolution of the game. And one thing we've seen this offseason is that players very much still want to play for Bill Belichick. Jalen Mills said that.
When I'm freaking out, and then I was like, my fault, coach. And I was just like, coach, one more thing. I got to cut you off. I don't want to disrespect. I just said, coach, you're a legend to me. I'm happy to be here.
Raekwon McMillan as well, saying he had other teams interested and that he wanted to come here to play for Bill Belichick, who was interested in drafting him.
Everything that he talked about progress and moving forward and being the person he knows that I can be. And hearing that from a Hall of Fame coach really inspired me to, you know what I'm saying, just get out there and do what I got to do.
And so here's my question with Bill. I feel like, Field, we focus and talk so much about Tom Brady and the urgency and immediacy that's needed with him and what we're seeing in Tampa, where they're bringing back like that whole team. You know, the latest guy now is Ndamukong Suh. Really, the only guy out there they haven't brought back as of this recording is Leonard Fournette. We talk so much about Tom's window. What about Bill? Bill turned 69 next month. And I know he sort of disavowed the previous Marv Levy comments about you won't find me on the sideline at 70. But when I look at what they're doing in free agency and how aggressive they were and how much he leveraged his legacy to bring in some of these players, I feel like maybe we're missing that. You know, Bill has some urgency and he has some expediency to his window, and that maybe he's only going to be around for another 4 or 5 years. And that's why the idea of a more traditional, slow, build it through the draft thing is not appealing, and why, you know, going out in free agency and going on this binge is appealing to Bill.
I don't know. I've never sort of sensed that Bill's timeline is imminent or anything. And I know that there are people who can't wait to retire because they have so much of life they want to take a bite out of on the other side of the professional world. But like, Bill seems to have, like, he kind of meets his quota of the stuff he enjoys besides football during the off season and whatever time he has. And then in football, like, it's, you know, it's one of the biggest downsides in coaching football is just how much time you spend away from your family. Well, you know, he's got his two sons on staff. You know, his whole family is in the area. Like, I think in some ways being around, it actually enhances his ability to spend some time with people that he cares about and loves. So he's always lived in the moment, but he strikes me as the kind of guy that's going to keep riding this out.
Yeah. And obviously he can pass Don Shula. I'm just curious, you know, do you think Bill's going to be on the sideline when he's 77? 78, 79, 80. I just think that's maybe, yeah. Really? So for me, I just think, look, at a certain point, you know, physically that becomes more challenging with the hours you have to put in. And also he just has such a great family life. Do you want to be able to dedicate a little bit more time to them?
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, it's one of those where I always feel like I'm sort of like projecting when I answer that with any level of certainty.
We all are. We all are.
For someone. Yeah. But my instinct is that, like, he's got a lot of football left in him. And I certainly think that he will unquestionably finish as the winningest coach in NFL history. It seems to me like that would mean a lot to the history of the game if he ends up surpassing the late, great Don Shula.
Did the 7-9, in your opinion, hit any harder because Tom Brady and his team was successful? And take away winning the Super Bowl, but they made the playoffs. For example, if Tom and Tampa had gone 6-10 and the Patriots had gone 7-9, do you think they would have behaved this offseason the exact same way with the exact same sense of urgency? Or just human nature, was it heightened in some ways by the fact that, you know, Tom had so much success in Tampa?
So if the question was still like, did it hit harder because of Tom? My instinct would be yes. You know, it's, I think that's just human nature to feel that way because the Bucs won the Super Bowl. If the Bucs don't win the Super Bowl, they make it to the playoffs but lose in round one, they miss the playoffs by a game, whatever it is. I think it maybe doesn't hit quite as hard, but still hits pretty instrumentally. I don't think, though, Chris, and again, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't think it changed the offseason plan. If they don't win this year, it won't be, to borrow, you know, to use the phrase one more time, it won't be because of lack of effort.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I also sort of subscribe to the human nature part of it, that you can have a plan that you're going to go out and be aggressive in free agency, but maybe it gets ramped up just a little bit, and there's players you just want to make sure you get to fill holes because you know that the guy down in Tampa you were with and had tremendous success with for 20 years is also stacking his team and getting everybody to come back. So we've talked about Bill Belichick a lot, and you mentioned he has, you know, good work-life balance, and part of that is Nantucket, and that's a place that Field Yates knows really well. And I don't know if some of you guys know this, but Field Yates, very attractive man, is a little bit of a model here. Sorry, Field, I have to bring this up. The other day, my wife and I, we've gone to Nantucket, and we were trying to figure out where can we go and bring our new dog, PJ. And I got this email from the Cottages, and they're advertising that you as a family can bring your dog. And I'm looking at the advertisement in the email and I'm like, man, that guy really looks like Field Yates. Well, it was. It's Field Yates, his lovely wife, and their dog. They are the faces of the Cottages advertising campaign for the summer of 2021. So, Field, you have to tell me how this came about. Was this just a photo somebody took and they asked you to use, or was it an actual photo shoot?
An actual photo shoot. And I'm actually 100% positive that the hook was, all right, so if we can secure Field's wife and his dog, does that mean, like, this is Field part of the package or not? Because I think if they had their druthers, it might have just been my wife and my dog. She's blonde and the dog is a golden retriever. You kind of have, like, you know, a little more synergy there. Meanwhile, instead, I got lumped into it. So that was, I tell you what, Chris, that was a day that I was still, you know, this was last summer. So we were still very much in, not that we aren't now, but at that time, like, limitations were even more severe in terms of how we were able to operate our lives day to day. And I look back on that day, and while I might get a little bit of gentle ribbing every once in a while for the photos, it was a very relaxing afternoon, and I will never, ever, ever, ever take that day for granted.
Well, thank you
it's
very much.
It's a great hotel.
It is. So we stayed there once before. It is a great hotel. We stayed there once before we had a dog. I have to thank you, because normally I get these emails, and I just sort of skip past them, but I saw your photo, and I'm like, oh, that guy looks really familiar. And so then I figured out it was you. And I did sort of out you on Twitter. Sorry about that. But yeah, we booked a reservation there because your dog looks like a younger version of our dog, who's 11 years old. So we're like, well, great. Now we know where to go with our dog on Nantucket. So thank you very much, Field. You are changing lives.
So you should be getting a cut of that is what I'm hearing, Field.
Alan, you're speaking my language right now. I'm going to see if I can orchestrate this. I might have to send the hotel a note and just, you know, I'll make sure that when the Gasper family checks in, they're like, I don't know, there's got to be some way that we can make this poll for all.
Yeah, you should get a referral or something.
Right, it's like, how did you hear of this place?
Yeah, at least a free night there.
I had to ask you about that. And I just want to ask Ellen, because Ellen, you have a lot of fans in the sports writer community, and your boyfriend is a sports writer. You do. I can't tell you, seriously. I'm serious. I don't want to embarrass Ellen, but there are so many people I work with in sports, including people at 98.5, who are always like, oh man, that Ellen Fleming, she seems so cool. Like, she's great. You're so lucky to work with her, the producer. Mm-hmm. They really like you. And so you seem to have hit your sweet spot with sports people. So I'm just curious, have you and Pete ever been in any sort of advertising campaign, modeling campaign?
You know what? No, we haven't. And frankly, I'm not happy about it now because I've also never been to Nantucket.
No, Pete has to take you.
But I mean, I do have one very important question for Field.
Yes.
Because this is more my lane. I heard you're a big Laguna Beach fan.
Oh, the biggest would be a much more accurate conversation. Ellen, you may remember Steven had like this trendy leather wristband he wore during the show.
I do, because I remember having one myself. When I was,
I'm pretty sure I went to like to Newbury Comics back in the day and bought like one of the seasons on DVD. And as a part of buying the season, you got one of those leather wristbands I had for a while. So yeah, my undying love, one of the recent shows that kind of helped get us through this really cold winter we had. If you haven't watched it, Summer House, Ellen, that's kind of like the more modern version of Laguna Beach. It's just fantastic.
I know really? Exactly what you're talking about.
So I've
about.
Seen Summer. So I've seen Summer House, and I have to say, I'm a big Laguna Beach fan too. I have to say, and I'm a huge Kristen Cavallari fan. Have the cookbook, follow her on Twitter. You know, would get Uncommon James stuff if they made men's stuff. But I don't know. I watch Summer House, and I'm a big fan of Paige as well. But I have to say, like, I kind of think that's blasphemy to compare those two shows. I am not a huge fan of Summer House, and I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Laguna. Laguna, but there's no Lauren Conrad on this. There's no, you know, Kristen Cavallari.
We have to also put in perspective, these people were 16 years old when they were on, and we have Summer House, which is like a bunch of like probably like, I would say in their 30s, coming out of a work week on the weekends. It's uncomparable. Like,
so I mean, I will say to Fields, like, I do watch it. Like, I do watch Summer House. I'm you know, sad, and it is entertaining. I just feel like it's not on the level of like Laguna, you know what I'm saying, which is like Monet level stuff, right? And then like Summer House is more maybe some modern art that's not for everybody.
You know what? I realize I probably need to retract my previous comparison, because Laguna is, I mean, that's like Hall of Fame level television. So I need to rethink my, I'm putting myself on television critic timeout for a little bit. I apologize for that.
Oh, it's all right.
And I apologize to all those on Laguna.
So Ellen and I threw the challenge flag on field there on Laguna Summer House. And upon further review, the pass is incomplete. Summer House does not make it at all. We'll get you out on this. Have you ever been to Laguna Beach? Because I have, and I went specifically because I had seen the show, and I went to Wahoo's Fish Tacos and did the whole thing and went to the beach. It is a lovely, lovely community, and I really enjoyed it. Have you ever been there?
I have never been to Laguna Beach. Put it on my to-do list. I have managed to think of 97 places I want to travel to because of the restrictions on travel for the past year. That's now on the list as well.
We covered a lot of ground here with ESPN NFL insider Field Yates. He's knowledgeable about all things football and Patriots. And as we learn, Laguna Beach and where you should take your dog for a summer vacation. Thanks for joining us here, Field.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.